Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 127, Always Have Your Spinning. Sunday, July 10th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: the front porch, the back porch, ever-expanding skill set, and gratitude journal. Congratulations to our prize winners who were announced in episode 126. Those folks have contacted me, and your prizes are already on their way to you. Thank you to our prize sponsors for the last episode, who were Carol of the Foster Sheep Farm Yarn Shop in Schuylerville, New York, and Claire, proprietor of The Woolly Thistle, online, and also of the New Hampshire Knits podcast. Thank you so much for your generous contributions. I know they will make some listeners very happy in the coming weeks. The front porch. Recently, I've had a dilemma about Tuesdays because everything fun I like to do in the area seems to happen on Tuesday nights. Tuesday is the yoga class I like. It's also the sit and knit at my local yarn shop, Mountain Knits and Pearls. And it's the night that one of our local towns has a farmer's market and live music. And that's a lot of fun too. And so I constantly face this dilemma of which one to choose. And then sometimes I get so frustrated that I end up not really doing any of those things. And it had been a very long time since I'd attended the knit night at Mountain Knits and Pearls. So this past week, I decided that that was my priority. And I took along a pattern that I have had in my queue for a while, which is the Selkie Hat and Mitt set by Bristol Ivy. And I wanted to purchase some yarn to knit this. My eventual goal is to knit this set in the beautiful Tamar yarn from the Woolly Thistle. However, I noted that the Tamar is a DK weight, and this hat and mitt set is knit in a worsted weight, and it's the kind of worsted weight that's like 200 yards per 100 grams. So there's a pretty significant difference in the weight of those yarns, what's specified in the Tamar that I want to use. So I thought I would try knitting the set in something very close to what's specified first, and then consider whether I need to make any adjustments in order to knit it in the Tamar. Maybe I could add another repeat to the hat. Maybe the mitts are stretchy enough that it wouldn't matter, but I thought maybe knitting it first in a worsted weight would help me make those decisions. So I picked out some Juniper Moon Farm Moonshine, which is a single. It's a worsted weight single. It's a wool alpaca and silk blend. I believe I've knit with this before, but I don't have the finished object, so I must have given it as a gift. I purchased the color June Bug, which is a beautiful, lustrous turquoise color, and I began knitting it on US size 5 needles. The pattern calls for 6, but knitting in the round, I tend to be kind of a loose knitter. So I thought the 5 would work well, and this yarn matches very closely the worsted weight that's called for in the pattern. I began with a tubular cast on, which is my preferred method for ribbing. And since this is 2x2 ribbing, then I needed to shift from 1x1 rib setup to the 2x2 rib setup. And I did that pretty successfully. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a later segment. So far I've just completed or nearly completed the ribbing on this hat. It's a beautifully cabled hat and mitt set that just looks, I don't know, it looks very rich and luxurious, and I think it's going to be great for a gift. So having two sets of those should not be a burden, especially around the holidays, and they'll make good gifts for some of the folks on my list. Another purchase I made at Mountain Knits and Pearls was a set of Addi flip sticks. These are a relatively new type of double pointed needle, and each needle has a sharp tip at one end and a blunt tip at the other. And in the pack of five, there are five differently colored needles. I was trying to think about what the point of that would be, and so far I haven't come up with anything except that it could be useful as a teaching tool. If you're teaching someone to knit with double pointed needles, then the different colors could help you be very specific about what you're instructing that learner to do. But the blunt tip and pointed tip combination, I think, could make for much faster knitting and just give you a variety of options with one set. I purchased the US size 6. Most of the needles I have for anything other than sock knitting are bamboo double pointed needles. The metal needles I have are only in size maybe 2.5 through 0. So this will be a useful addition to my collection of needles. And I was thinking about an idea for a future episode to do a bit of a review about different brands of knitting needles that I use and how I store my needles. So if that interests you, I hope you will let me know, or maybe even give me some suggestions about what you would like to hear or what you would like to learn on an episode like that. The back porch. This week I have completed one of the Agatha socks that I've been knitting as a gift, a Christmas gift for my mother. And while we were visiting my sister in Vermont, I made a tracing of her foot so that I could use it to get an idea of how long to make the foot of the sock. I was pretty happy with my tracing and moving along toward, you know, closing the toe on the sock. And then I compared the tracing I did of my mother's foot with the one I had made of mine. And they were nearly the same length, even though my mom wears a size 7 shoe and I wear a size 9. So I don't know what happened. Maybe I didn't do that correctly. I know that the person is supposed to be standing to make the outline of the foot, and I'm using all of the information I have for the Fish Lips Kiss heel, which has some excellent directions, not just for turning the heel of a sock in a rather innovative way, but also just how to fit a sock in general. And I found that information very helpful, and I thought that having a cardboard outline of my mother's foot would be very helpful. And now I'm starting to doubt the whole thing. So I brought all of the knitting to the point where I'm just about to Kitchener the toe closed. And then I put all of those stitches on a needle holder. And then I think I will just need to ask my mom to try on that sock. And if I need to rip the toe back and shorten it, I can do that. Or if it seems to be fitting fine, I can just close up the toe. So ongoing sock saga. I have cast on the second Agatha sock, and I'm working on knitting the twisted rib cuff. I'm very much enjoying knitting this pair of socks, and I feel like socks are something that I feel like are much more difficult when I'm not working on them and not very difficult when I am working on them. So gradually I'm starting to overcome my aversion, I think. These beautiful Agatha socks are being knit on US size 0 double pointed needles. The yarn I'm using for this pattern is from Jinx Yarns. It's in her BFL sock, which is beautiful Blue Face Lester nylon blend. I really like the feel of this. It's quite a thin yarn, and that is working out well on my US zeros. And in the skein, this looked like one matte, consistent color. But as I'm knitting, there's just a little bit of tonality to this skein. The colorway is called Sea Salt Ice Cream, and it's a beautiful, chalky, light turquoise blue-green. It's really perfect for the Agatha sock pattern because there's nothing in the coloring of the yarn that's detracting from the beautiful lattice design. So I think it's a great match of pattern to yarn, and I'm very much enjoying knitting with it. The skein has well over 400 yards, and I think that there will be quite a bit left over. I don't know if it will be enough for another pair of socks, maybe short socks like Rose City Rollers, but it will definitely be enough to work into a future project or maybe even to use for heels and toes of another sock. So I'm enjoying working on those Agatha socks, and eventually I will solve the problem of the fit of the sock. In the meantime, I've been doing a great deal of spinning for Tour de Fleece, and I have completed one of my spinning projects. That is the gradient spin of naturally colored fibers. I worked with some Jacob from my Sheep to Shawl class, and then some East Frisian Tunis cross that was given to me by my classmate Kathy. I have talked in a previous episode about my fiber prep. I did cut the tips from this fiber to solve some of the drawbacks, I suppose you could say, of the fiber itself and capitalize on the beautiful and interesting aspects of the fiber. I think in my original weight calculation, I may have been relying on the unwashed, unprepped fiber weight because I thought I was spinning about 4 ounces of fiber. And my finished skein is only 3.4 ounces. So the 500 yards that I was hoping for did not end up being the case. I have a beautiful skein of 316 yards of a yarn that's about a sport weight yarn because this plumped up quite a bit when I washed it. It's a 2-ply yarn and it transitions in a gradual way from light to quite dark. And since there's some inconsistency in my fiber measurements, there's some barber pulling. So the color transitions don't happen all at once. They sort of happen more gradually and inconsistently. And I didn't think I wanted any barber pulling in this skein, but it's really beautiful and it actually gives the skein quite a number of additional color transitions than there would be otherwise. So despite the lack of yardage, I am very pleased with this skein of yarn and my 316 yards. And I think that it will end up being a gift. I have to decide whether or not I want to show the skein in person to Kathy, who gave me the fiber, before I send it off as a gift, or whether I just can't wait and I'm going to send it right away. So that's the only thing left there is to decide. And in the meantime, I'm continuing with other spinning projects. The big project is a braid of fiber from Three Waters Farm, and I am spinning on the Three Waters Farm team for Tour de Fleece. This is a June green tonal. It's some beautiful golden green. This is spinning up very fine. On my Louette wheel, I have completed the first 2 ounces, and I'm working on the second 2. And this will be a 2-ply yarn. I think it will be a light fingering weight. And I'm not going to say anything about my hopes for the yardage, because that seems like a very sure way of spoiling it. Also, my Go Everywhere With Me spinning is a set of hobbledehoy batlings that I just purchased at the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival. They're in the colorway Hello Sunshine, which has beautiful oranges, yellows, and some pinks. There was one little batling with quite a bit of blue in it that I just finished spinning. And then recently, when the Bovine Social Club performed in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, I was able to do a bit of shopping during sound check. And at a vintage shop, I purchased a lovely little bag made of reclaimed sari silk. And then it has some very simple embroidery stitching going through it. That's the perfect size for one little batling and my turtle made spindle. I always like to have some drop spindle spinning with me wherever I go. It's a great way to just center and focus if I have a few quiet minutes, or if I'm in a situation where it seems comfortable to just take it out and start spinning away. That's also a lot of fun, and having those bright colors is an instant pick-me-up. I'm also about 2/3 of the way through the Geyser Stretch Shawl by Stephen West, and I'm knitting those in the lovely analogous green colors. So having a project on US size 7, 5, and 0 needles seems like a really good idea for avoiding hand strain, keeping up interest in a variety of different kinds of knitting, and always having something that I could pick up and work on. Ever-expanding skill set. I was not expecting another new episode of the Twin Set Designs podcast so soon, because I know that Jan and Ellen have had their summer camp retreat just over the past weekend, and they put out an episode rather recently. But I was chatting with my friend Mary Beth, and she said, "Oh, there's lots of news. You have to listen." I'm referring to episode 79, Almost Time for Camp, in which Jan makes a very impressive announcement. And they also talk about the podcasters with whom they would like to have dinner. And thank you, Jan, for mentioning me on your list. That is so kind. And I agree, our little chat at Maryland Sheep and Wool was not nearly enough time to get to know one another. Later in the episode, Ellen reads a negative space essay that she's written about the importance of committing some things to memory and to develop a kind of self-sufficiency of relying on our own knowledge and memory, even in an age where we have so much available right at our fingertips. In particular, she mentions, why not commit the Kitchener Stitch directions to memory rather than look them up every single time you need to do it? Guilty. And the way she shares this message is incredibly powerful. It's not just about the Kitchener Stitch. It addresses some really far-reaching themes and topics of our time. And I thought, what a good challenge. And I have accepted the challenge, Ellen. I hope that you are able to find the time to put this essay in its entirety online so that I could read it as well as hear you reading it. I would like to refer to it again in the future. But I decided that in addition to the Kitchener Stitch, I would commit to memory the tubular cast-on that I've mentioned many times because this is my preferred method for beginning any pattern that has ribbing at the start. It gives such a polished and professional finish. It's such a stretchy way to cast on. And I have been referring to Isolde Teague's video every time I want to begin this cast on. There's also a variation for this cast on in which you switch from 1x1 rib to 2x2 rib. The initial cast on and first two rows are the same. And then when you do your first row of, you know, regular ribbing, then you switch some stitches around so that you have the 2x2 rib. And this, I was always going to the video and referring to it every time I cast on. So this time I watched the video and then the next day, without referring to the video, I cast on. And then the next day, I cast on a little charity hat with the same type of cast on. And I found that I really did know this cast on. I was just using the video as a crutch to help me overcome my own insecurity or something. I would also like to commit to memory the tubular bind-off, which is a type of sewn bind-off. At least, I think there's a knitted version, but the kind of bind-off that I use is sewn. So similar to a Kitchener, except that you're not bringing two pieces of fabric together. You're simply creating an edge that mirrors your tubular cast-on edge. For this, I have been used to referring to the Very Pink Knits video tutorial, and I do enjoy those tutorials very much. Very Pink Knits has clear, easy-to-understand instructions for a lot of knitting techniques, bind-offs and cast-ons especially. But I shouldn't really be referring to them every time, given the number of times I have used this bind-off. So I'm going to work on committing that to memory as well. And that has probably three times the number of steps as a Kitchener closure does. So it might be a little bit more of a challenge. But Ellen, I want to thank you for that lovely negative space essay with a very timely topic, and I enjoy the Twinset Designs podcast so much, so I look forward to more introspection, challenges, and your very lighthearted delivery in the future. Reading two books with a culinary focus and cooking with farmers market produce has been making this summer incredibly enjoyable. I did change the hashtag Power Pantry theme for July from Farmers Market Bounty to Farm Fresh Bounty because I had some questions about whether or not it was okay to use frozen things or things from your own garden or things from CSA. And yes, yes, yes. All of those things are encouraged during this month. And I didn't mean to be anything other than inclusive. So I think the new wording will maybe help make that clear. I've been shopping at the Saturday Farmers Market in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, which has grown exponentially over the years, and it's just really a lot of fun with great vendors, quite a lot of variety, and it stays very focused on local products and produce. So it's very well curated. In the past, I've attended a little local market that was billed as a farmer's market, and there were two vendors with local produce, and then many, many vendors with sort of shoddily made jewelry, estate sale finds, dog toys. It wasn't a farmer's market, and it was very frustrating. So it's a lot of fun to shop at the Saturday farmer's market and find things that are exactly what I'm expecting when I attend a farmer's market. So far, the highlight of summer cooking has been the recipe for grilled snap peas with a spicy peanut dipping sauce. This recipe comes from Dishing Up the Dirt. It's a beautiful blog by Andrea Bemis. She and her husband run Tumbleweed Farm, which is a CSA in the Pacific Northwest, and she has just a lovely catalog of recipes using farm fresh produce on her blog. They're divided very nicely into sections for breakfast, smoothies, soups, salads. So you can search for the kind of dish you'd like to make, and there is some overlap. So she has vegan and vegetarian as sections, and there will be recipes repeated in those sections if they fit the description. One thing that I hope she adds to her blog soon is a search tool so that you could put in an ingredient name and find recipes that use that ingredient. So far, I found that it is searchable in that the recipe titles are very descriptive and there's a very clear photograph of each prepared recipe. So that if you have something from the farmer's market and you're looking for a cooking idea, you can find it pretty easily. I have tagged a number of recipes that interest me, and depending on what I find fresh and beautiful at the farmer's market, I might be trying those or trying variations for some of those. This week, I would also like to make some chickpea pancakes. They're also referred to as pudla, and I have a fabulous recipe from my friend Fernanda for those. I think the recipe comes from her mother-in-law, so it's very authentic. She also gave me a recipe for a cilantro-based dipping sauce, but I have some leftover spicy peanut dipping sauce, so I think that could be a good thing to try with those chickpea pancakes. I also found on the Food and Wine website a recipe for warm yellow wax beans in bacon vinaigrette. My favorite produce is string beans. They were something that I remember very fondly from growing up, and it's one of those things like sweet corn where having the fresh, just picked variety is such a world of difference from anything that you could purchase fresh or frozen. And I remember having string beans cooked just to the point where they still squeak between your teeth, and having melted butter and salt on them. And this weekend at the farmer's market, I found wax beans, which are the yellow variety of string bean. And they do have a different flavor than green string beans, but also really delicious in my book. And I was looking for an interesting recipe for those. So I think I'll be trying that warm yellow wax beans in a bacon vinaigrette. Yum. And I also bought some peaches for the second time. These are beautiful cling variety. So it's a yellow peach. They are more delicious than the cling free, in my opinion. I think that lots of folks favor the cling free or free stone variety because they come easily away from the pit when you're preparing them. Cling peaches can tend to look a little bit mashed if you're not very careful as you prep and cut them, but I think the flavor is much better. And in the recent issue of Taproot, issue 18, Preserve, I found an article about making snaps. This is a very simple preparation involving some sort of spirits and then fresh herbs or fruit or other produce. The article suggested whiskey and peaches as a winning combination. So I think I'll be trying to use a few of those peaches to make into a version of snaps. Each issue of Taproot has three sections: head, hands, and heart. And then there are a variety of different articles, recipes, patterns, directions in each of those sections. And typically they begin with some sort of quoted passage. In issue 18, the hands section begins with a beautiful passage from Wendell Berry. It's from 1969. It's from his first collection of essays. They merge deep thinking, memoir, and just exquisite writing. The collection is called The Long-Legged House. And this is the passage that was reprinted in the recent edition of Taproot. We have lived our lives by the assumption that what is good for us would be good for the world. We have been wrong. We must change our lives so that it will be possible to live by the contrary assumption that what is good for the world will be good for us. And that requires that we make the effort to know the world and what is good for it. I've copied that passage into my journal for further reflection. And upon reading it, I was struck with a very deep feeling of gratitude that the folks I have met through the world of fiber and fiber arts are, many of them, people who have already adopted this contrary way of thinking. Thinking about what is good for the world and making it so that it's also good for us. Beyond adopting this contrary way of thinking, the most extraordinary people work to convince others of this way of thinking. Often it's in a very gentle, very unassuming way. Their message is delivered by actions more often than words, but sometimes words and actions too. The result of that is incredibly powerful. So I'm thankful for the fiber arts community. And I think that there are many ways to think about what is good for the world. We could talk about what's good for the world in terms of our eating, our purchasing, our words and our actions, the way we think about people who may be other or unlike us, and to put the needs of the world before our own selfish concerns is a very important lesson of contemporary life and something that I think we need to spend more time and energy working on than maybe we have been in the past.
Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Lena Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or following me on social media. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.